Bhagavad Gita, text number 33. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shreyam. Translation. O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all, O son of Pritha, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. Purport. The purpose of all sacrifices is to arrive at the status of complete knowledge, then to gain release from material miseries, and ultimately to engage in loving transcendental service to the Supreme Lord, Krishna Consciousness. Nonetheless, there is a mystery about all these different activities of sacrifice, and one should know this mystery. Sacrifices sometimes take different forms according to the particular faith of the performer. When one's faith reaches the stage of transcendental knowledge, the performer of sacrifices should be considered more advanced than those who simply sacrifice material possessions without such knowledge. For without attainment of knowledge, sacrifices remain on the material platform and bestow no spiritual benefit. Real knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness, the highest stage of transcendental knowledge. Without the elevation of knowledge, sacrifices are simply material activities. When, however, they are elevated to the level of transcendental knowledge, all such activities enter onto the spiritual platform. Depending on differences in consciousness, sacrificial activities are sometimes called karma kanda, fruitive activities, and sometimes jnana kanda, knowledge in the pursuit of truth. It is better when the end is knowledge. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Peshtaya Bhutale Srimada Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasate Devam Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Shunyavari Paskatyari Satarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadha Sivasari Gomakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. In the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we find different yagyas or sacrifices described. A Vedic sacrifice was something quite amazing, I should say. It is described that during some of these yagyas, old horses would take on new material bodies. They would enter the flames and by the power of mantra be transformed and obtain a new physical body. This everyone could see. Just like in modern chemics, we sometimes have experiences where we put together two kinds of acids and a certain third wonderful thing is created, smoke and noise and a dirty ceiling for everyone to see. These Vedic yagyas also had direct effects in the physical world. The yagyas described were kings who were actually childless, performed certain rituals, and then out of the fire entity came forward who was dressed in a white dhoti with gold and who brought forth a pot of sweet rice, which was given to the wife of the childless king, who then could, after eating it up, give birth to a child. This was actually common. And there were yagnas described where all of a sudden the Supreme Lord Vishnu, riding on his Garud, was practically seen. Now, being in a Danish context where reality is gross and physical, I want to give you a little background in the art of yagya. Not long ago, Professor Stahl from the University of Berkeley, a Sanskrit expert and Indology professor, went to South India to perform one of those yagyas. He did it precisely according to the rules which were given. You can read about this yagya in two big volumes, big like this. I saw them in the Frankfurt University. It was a simple yagya which was meant to give rain, to bring rain, one of the simple stuff. So it is described that after long procedures, finally, when the last offering was thrown into the fire and the last mantra came, two big eagles, which had a size which is not common in the knowledge of biology. They were very large, from here up to the picture of this Rajasthani painting. Huge eagles began floating over the yagya stal. This is the place where the yagya was performed. And then, before the eyes of TV and the Bombay news reporters, the fire increased so much so that it finally devoured the roof of the yagya stal. And then from nowhere, out of the blue, it started to rain. Now, in this part of the land, of the country, rain was not seen for a long, long time. I believe for a period of a couple of years. And there was no, what is the English word, meteorological explanation why all of a sudden the rain came. But for experts in Vedic yagya, the explanation is simple. It was due to the yagya. What else? Now, this is documented in TV and newspapers, and we can, without feeling shameful, present this also to the Danish populace. This shows that the potency of yagya, if performed strictly according to the rules. Now, many of those highly potent yagyas cannot be performed in this Kali Yuga, because the qualified brahmanas are simply not there. But some of them still can, and this was one. Now, in this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna explains the different forms of yagya, we should care to understand the method, the methodic explanation, and that is that by this yagya, the Supreme Lord ultimately can be seen and understood. This is the high point in yagya. Now, for this to take place, a mere mechanical execution of the rules and regulations is simply not possible or sufficient. you have to come to the platform of knowledge. And this brings me to the subject matter of this evening. The sacrifice of knowledge is higher than the sacrifice of material goods. In our movement for Krishna consciousness, we also partake in yajna. Through this yajna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is becoming visible, actually. This yajna is the Sankirtan yajna, which is prescribed for this present age. Sankirtan yajna means to chant the holy names of Krishna together. Just like today, the devotees went out onto the lower planetary systems, into the city of in the interior of the jungle of Copenhagen, and we performed the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Now, of course, for us, we are a little new in this transcendental yajna. For us, it is was maybe a nice dance and so on and so forth. But for a pure devotee, this is something else. Once Prabhupada came home from a Ratha Yatra ceremony where a lot of chanting was going on, and he turned towards the driver and said, "Have you seen Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, how beautiful they were dancing?" So Prabhupada asked this in complete ecstasy, and the driver could only say, "Yes," because he didn't want to disturb Srila Prabhupada. But it goes to show that a pure devotee, when doing the Sankirtan Yajna, makes the same experience which we have here described, that a transcendental result comes. In the old days, in our temples, when we had Aratik, there were two seats, one for Shukadev Goswami and one for Narada Muni, because it was understood that they also would come by the performance of the Sankirtan Yajna, and they would sit down, and Prabhupada said, "Narada Muni enjoys very much to see them. Let us in Yavanas dance and chant in jubilation to the holy name." So this is they would come, but ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes by the performance of this yajna. There is a verse in this connection which is very nice. It is "Nahang tishtami vaikunte yoginam hridayeshuva mat bhakta yatra ghayante." The last line is just now not completely present. It says that "Nahang tishtami Vaikunte." I am not in Vaikunta. I'm also not in, this is Krishna speaking, I'm also not in the hearts of the mystical yogis. Then where are you? "Mat bhakta yatra ghayanti tatha tishtami narada." This is the "tatha tishtami narada," which means there where my devotees chant the holy name, there I am, Narada. So you can see from this shloka that actually Krishna appears when we perform the Sankirtan Yajna. Now, in this Sankirtan Yajna, it is very important to obtain some knowledge. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes a very interesting statement. He says, "The mere repetition of the syllables is not enough. You need to have some Sambandhyan." And therefore, here in the chapter, Sambandhyan, you know what this is? Meaning is, not completely, knowledge of the soul, of the world around you. What is your relationship to this world? One thing we know, we are not the body. That's our relationship to this material universe. We are not, we are asanga actually, not attached, not one with this world. we are different, and we have a relationship to Krishna as his eternal parts and parcel. Sambandha Jnana is, in other words, 3 points: the soul, the world, and God. This is very important, and the spiritual master's duty is to educate his disciple in this Sambandha Jnana. In other words, for Sankirtan Yajna, for our present Yajna, we need to have a transmitter of transcendental knowledge, because if we do not have transcendental knowledge, it won't be so effective. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita, see, this is a very nice, the Bhagavad Gita has different levels of teachings. Now, I'm going into a very deep subject. The next verse is mentioning the spiritual master. You all know this verse. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. For by this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme. Or in other words, that they are mine. Even if you are considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you will be able to cross over the ocean of miseries. So strong is this part of transcendental knowledge. As a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism, and one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge, and having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. So these are some of the verses which Krishna speaks in order to stress the importance of transcendental knowledge. In this Krishna consciousness movement, our success and failure, it will depend also on our conscious absorption of this transcendental knowledge. Now, as we all know, there are 2 ways of obtaining knowledge. One is by reading the Shastras, but the other is by practicing devotional service, because Krishna, who is residing within the heart, Teshang Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami means gifts. Dadami buddhi means intelligence. Dadami buddhi, what kind of buddhi? Buddhi yogam tvam. Dadami buddhi yogam tvam yena mam upajantite. That means Krishna, who is satisfied by the execution of pure devotional service, he will give that knowledge. Of course, in order, now there are 2 kinds, so to say, which are actually one. We should practice the process of devotional service, and then we will be full with knowledge, which will be given by Krishna from within. This knowledge is very important. It is not knowledge how many Perlmutt buttons there are in Copenhagen on white shirts or so on. It's, in other words, not numerical knowledge. And numerical knowledge means knowledge where you can count certain things. It is a phenomenal knowledge. That means knowledge which is of existential importance. So this transcendental knowledge is given by Sri Krishna to him who engages in the process of devotional service under the instructions of a spiritual master. In this verse, which we read in the last, this is the last verse, and I just presume that most of you had difficulty to catch this very subtle point. Krishna says that for this, in order to achieve such knowledge, we have to attain two qualifications. One is we have to have faith, and this was the subject of yesterday's lecture, so I won't talk again on this, on the evening lecture. We have to control our senses. For a man who is whose senses are uncontrolled, it is very difficult to engage in devotional service, because he won't be able to see certain things. To give you a very simple example, I want to introduce you to a dog. Imagine the dog runs into a place of art. Now, the thing which he will do is, when he sees a piece of art, he will ceremoniously lift his leg, left leg, and shower the piece of art with the dog's marking. I was here, Leo. This will be his pronouncement. Now, a professor of art will go there, and because he has studied the science, he will fall into some appreciation. He will say, oh, it is so nice, the colors are mixed so perfectly, they just blend to the whole mood of the picture, and he will be angry at the dog. You, good for nothing, just leave this. So this makes a point. The consciousness someone has obtained, or determines how he will be able to perceive the world around himself. Do you understand this? My level of consciousness will definitely describe the power of my knowledge. Like Chanakya Pandit says, a lusty man sees the whole world full of women who are for his enjoyment. An ascetic, when he sees a beautiful lady, is not interested. And a dog sees, oh, here is a walking piece of meat. I would like to eat it. This is his perception. So you can see from this simple, it's a very simple point. The level of the consciousness determines the power of the consciousness to see and understand things. Now, in order to understand transcendental knowledge, or let us better say, to be the receiver of transcendental knowledge, our consciousness must be clear. If we have muddied consciousness, which is full of material desires, full of contaminations, it won't be our consciousness won't be able to understand transcendental knowledge. It is simply not possible. So therefore, in order to understand the science of Krishna consciousness, we have to control our senses. If we remain full of lust, full of mediocre appetites and urges, it won't be possible for us to really understand the science of Krishna consciousness. It will be impossible, in fact, to understand. So, in the training which we receive from our spiritual master, we are time and time again told to purify our consciousness. Prabhupada once said, this is a movement for purification. This is it's not a religion, it is a movement for purification. And as we all have heard, there are certain rules which are very conducive to purify the consciousness. It is described as, I will find it for you in a fast way, that there are 6 points which are very essential for developing Krishna consciousness. Utsaha means enthusiasm. When we are following a spiritual path, our enthusiasm will be always attacked by Maya. Our enthusiasm will be attacked when we are out on book distribution, isn't it, Lalitanath? All of a sudden we are not enthusiastic, and we really do not know how this comes about. The reason for our lack of enthusiasm is that our consciousness is not pure. Because the soul is full of transcendental power, full of the potency of bhakti, which the soul wants to connect in loving devotional service to Krishna. But all of a sudden, a dark cloud comes into our consciousness, which is some impurity, some material desires. Utsaha nishchayat. Nishchayat means we should be perseverant in our activity. Dayat, we should be patient. Tatat karma pravartanat, we should follow the rules which are laid down for what is it? Chanting and hearing about Vishnu, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. We should give up the association of materialistic minded people and follow the footsteps of previous acharyas. So these principles become extremely difficult to follow when our consciousness is impure. In an impure consciousness, only material desires will take place, not desires to serve Krishna. Just like it is natural for a pure soul to remember Krishna and to love Krishna, it is natural for an impure soul to forget Krishna and become attracted to Maya. It is automatic. It is beyond our own control. It is. Prabhupada gave this very nice example, which will make it very clear to one and all. A magnet, by its nature, is attracted to iron. Or let us better formulate it the other way around. The iron is attracted to magnet. Now, if the iron is very much covered by rust, it's not attracted. So, the living entity has an eternal relationship with Krishna, and in its natural state is over thinking of Krishna, chanting Krishna's name. But when the consciousness is avritam jnana etena, if this knowledge and this natural attraction is covered, then we are no longer attracted. We find it boring. We think of again a day in Krishna consciousness. Again I have to rise up. Breakfast will be probably uninspiring if I don't steal the Mahaprasadam. Then I have to go to the class and the kirtan. So on, we fall into this routine. Do you sometimes have the experience that this routine is there? It means you become covered. The originally vice Maturesh, or the originally vice Lila Shuka, or Lalita Nath, Lulabra is your name. No, what is it? Lulajit. Lulajit, yeah. The originally vice Lulabra becomes covered, yes, by Maya. And then we are not at all attracted. Then everything becomes a drag. This three A's. So the process of Krishna consciousness it can take place in an inspired heart, but it is boring and not and even impossible to conduct in an uninspired or covered heart, which is covered by lust. And this is the point where I want to get it. In this world, you will find two kinds of fires. What is it? Cow dung fire and wood fire. No, we are talking of two completely different kinds of fire. One is the fire of lust. That fire will burn away one's Krishna consciousness, Krishna conscious knowledge. Just like it is described, that avritam jnanam etina. Yes, this was the shloka. The knowledge of the living entity is kama rupa. By the form of the rupa, by the rupa of lust, the form of the lust, it is covered. Lust, you can, doesn't just mean scandalous behavior like in downtown Copenhagen in the posters and the cinemas. Lust means also selfish desires for sense gratification. So, in Krishna consciousness, we light up another fire, the fire of transcendental knowledge, which will burn away this lusty mentality, and it will also burn away the seeds of our karma, which are there in many different forms, in four different forms, but one of the forms of the karma is the desires which are in our heart. Like you can see, now there will be an ordinary Dane, mediocre, nothing special. And no one thought any ill of him, but this night he commits a violent crime. He kills three women and so on. I don't know what he does with them, something wild. So nobody thought he would be capable of doing it. He was just such an ordinary Dane. He every day went to the shop and bought 1 liter milk and 1 loaf of bread. How could he do this? The reason is because of desires within his heart, which were there as a result to reactions, to karmic, to previous performed activities. And these desires became manifested in some practical activities and practical deeds. So in Krishna consciousness, this knowledge which we obtain, it burns away burns down the seeds of karma. This is explained here, in case you do not really believe this momentous statement. I will read it to you again. Very amazing statement. As a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. It's amazing, isn't it? This particular verse. In case you want to read it and study it more, it is in the first chapter, verse 37. Say it again so that we can all cherish it and remember it when we go to bed. As a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. So this Krishna conscious philosophy is not some armchair speculation, spot for the idle mind, or just for the philosophers like Maturesh, who have nothing better to do than translate and who are not fit to go on Sankirtan. This transcendental knowledge is important to one and all of us. We should never stop, although our attention fails to grasp these high concepts. We should never stop in trying to understand what Krishna says, because this knowledge will help us very much. It is the best of our friends. It will protect us with a sword. It's called the sword of knowledge. Sometimes this is scary. Which the sword of master gives you is your best weapon when you are attacked by Maya. And it is the best thing in order to get free from the material energy. Now, As I was saying previously, we can choose between two kinds of fires. One is the fire of knowledge, which is very cooling and very blissful, and the other is the fire of attachment, which devours all good reason and all good sense. For instance, one attachment is the attachment to eating. Somehow, due to some unreasonable mechanism in the body, we feel attracted to big amounts of foods. Although it's actually, if you go to think of it, only one fraction of a second when this food goes over our tongue and the tongue gets agitated, and it's maybe a few hours of intense work. You have to digest this until the sweat comes on your forehead. Then you have to run to the toilet and spend a considerable amount of time there. You have to sleep much because it takes so much energy out of the mind, out of the brain, so that you get completely uninspired and have to lay down. And in this way, we remain a slave to our tongue, an extreme hard worker. It is, in a way, if you consider this attachment to eating, it is actually so ridiculous, isn't it? It's just 1 second where it tingles on the tongue, and then it's hours and hours of work. You become dull, uninspired, ugly, and all kinds of diseases develop, and you will find an unglorious, untimely death. I said in Ayurveda, most of the diseases come from eating too much. Yes. So, but as I said, somehow due to the force of the body, we are attached. Now another undue attachment is to sexuality, the holy cow of materialism. Somehow or other, people's mind revolves so much around the subject. And in the activity, sexuality is completely unromantic, actually. It is concerning itself with sweat and with places where urine drips forth, and so on and so forth. But due to some magical moment, the magical arrangement, those magical moments, we become highly fascinated and captured in our heart. A fist of lust is squeezing our heart for those magical moments. Hare Krishna. This is a fact. It is so unromantic. It is even not smelling extremely good, these places. But still, it is becoming the central focus of poesy and literature and films and civilization. This is attachment. It works in a completely unlogical, irrational way. But as I said, when the fire of lust comes, then this gets, we become completely overwhelmed. There are these verses, I do not know if you are good in Kami verses, come on baby, light my fire. And then Friday is a night on fire. And so on and so forth. There are many good Kami verses which illustrate this. It is a completely irrational activity which is described by more well-versed authors than I am. In opposition to this, now I want to give you a little description, because it's Saturday Night Fever. all over Copenhagen, of this fire of attachment, so we could learn something from it and choose to go into the soothing fire of knowledge. Yes? But it will be a little heavy. I want to introduce you to Romeo and Julia. You might have heard it's from Shakespeare. It is a cultured discussion, in other words. Romeo and Julia committed suicide because their families were opposed to the relationship. And since they couldn't have each other, therefore they felt a little frustrated and killed themselves in the high point of emotion. So everyone, this example is always held forward, how intense love can be, how it can go beyond one's own expectations for life, security, money, table records, and so on. They just killed themselves because they couldn't have them, have themselves. So intense. This is shown as an example how intense it is. And therefore the whole world is illusioned by this story. But now I want to tell you, imagine they would not have killed themselves. Imagine we would have visited them 30 years later. Julia would be very fat by now. Like in India, when the women marry, they are usually extremely attractive, but after 2 years they are they can't even walk through the doors. Sometimes we see this also in other sociological contexts. Hare Krishna. This is amazing. It is a universal thing. So then Julia would have seen that Romeo was actually not as chaste and attached as he always said he would be. He had gone with other women. She found it out. And therefore she felt very frustrated. And one day, one night, she just waited on him with a big club in her head, and, "Run, you lusty dog!" Then lately, Romeo felt out, he noticed that Julia began snoring. And therefore his rest became disturbed. He could not. Now this is very realistic. I mean, you all laugh because you have nothing to do with the materialistic relationships, but this is very realistic. I've heard this sometimes. And so you just saw this fat monster Julia start snoring. But still he cannot leave her, because by now they would have 6 children for whom Romeo would have to work extremely hard all night and all day, and they would always come, "Daddy, give me more money. I now want to have a mandolino." And they would break everything in the house. It would be fatala loca, the house. Now this is what would happen 30 years later. All the romance, all the high expectations finished. Nothing left. It's only work, misery, desperation, and so on and so forth. Now you think this is an exaggeration of a sannyasi who has nothing else to do than to make fun about the material world, but this is not a fact. Why do you think people want to divorce so enthusiastically? It's because of that. Most people are just too much held in the grip of the social life that they don't dare to get a divorce, because what would the other think? And also, then I would have to only get half of the house, and I want all of it, and and better wait until the other is dead, and so on and so forth. It is for this reason. It is a material attachment is unrational. It is not, it doesn't keep up with the harsh reality at all. So, but again, as I said, when the fire of lust is burning in the heart, it burns away all knowledge, knowledge about everything, and we become slaves to primitive instincts which also rule the animal species. Therefore, in Krishna consciousness, we try to develop transcendental knowledge, and we act according to this. Even if we do not understand transcendental knowledge, but still act according to the instructions which are given, this fire of transcendental knowledge will be lit up in our heart by Krishna. Therefore, Dadavi Buddhi Yogam Tam, he gives that knowledge, by which ultimately we can come to Krishna and stop our material entanglements. However, this path is for the determined. Therefore, in Vedic education, it was very much necessary to follow the rules of celibacy. The Brahmachari ashram was the prerequisite of a spiritual education. This mixing, like you can see today in modern education, modern life, is actually highly uncultured, because by this the fire of lust is, So let us, now after having spoken about this two kinds of fires, I want to introduce a third fire. Yastvindram Gopamaravendram Ahosvakama Kama Bandhanu Rupa. We have heard Kama Rupa, but now we hear Bandhanu Rupa. That means the form of bondage. Bandhanu Rupa Palabhajana Matanoti Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Chabhakti Bhajam Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. This verse is very, very nice, and I have, because my English is at times faulty, highly faulty, dear, thought I would bring this to you in the original version. Hopefully we find here. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who burns up to their roots all fruitive activities of those who are imbued with devotion and impartially ordains for each the due enjoyment of the fruits of one's activities. Of all those who walk in the path of work in accordance with the chain of their previously performed works, no less in the case of the tiny insect that bears the name of Indragopa than in that of Indra, king of the Devas. In other words, Krishna consciousness, which is the highest form of knowledge, which is the peak of transcendental existence, burns our karma, our conditioning, into pieces, which burns to the root, this bhakti bhajam, this bhakti knowledge, it burns to the root our material existence. So please, Prabhus, let us become transcendentalists who are fully taking shelter in this process of Krishna consciousness. Let us absorb ourselves with full enthusiasm and take shelter in this Sankirtan Yajna as long as our body allows it, before we sink into the graveyard, and then make our life successful. If we could just do this, it will be wonderful. Only a person who is free from attachments, he is actually free. Only the Krishna consciousness person is really free from attachments, because he is free from desires, which are caused by material activities. And how does he attain this enviable position? Very simple process. He follows the path chalked out by the spiritual master and by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, and merges his consciousness in the chanting of the holy name. So I want to end here. I hope you have some questions. I actually had notes on another subject, but because it is Saturday night fever, I just felt this has to be spoken about, this has to be discussed. So one should talk according to time, place, and circumstance. So, do you have any questions regarding all this? Jaina Singha?
So, Maharaj, I just came from my family birthday.
You came?
My mother's birthday.
Yes? And how old?
48.
Good.
Yeah. They were arguing that because they are reading some Danish philosopher called Martinus.
Who? Martinus? Have not heard of him.
So he says that all living entities are progressing gradually towards perfection. So there's no need really to take up any spiritual process, because it's like the argument thing. It seems like they're very lazy together.
It would be nice if it would be for the Danes, it would be very good. They could stay hygelig. Then don't send your children to school. It comes automatically. No need. Then don't work. Just sit around. Yes, I'm doing it. I'm going to the welfare. No, this is work. You don't just sit, remain sitting. It will come. The cake will come flying in your mouth. Gradually, without endeavor, everything happens. It's an automatic process. We get everything automatically. Why go to the social welfare? Is it? But there are better answers. But of course, really to answer this philosopher, we would have to know how he argues. I guess he will be...
No one goes back in evolution. You know? He speaks about
that we are reincarnated. He is spiritually minded.
Yeah, so he says that once you reach a certain level of consciousness, then you cannot lose that consciousness again. You cannot degrade.
Now I understand. I didn't understand that.
He's like a New Age philosopher.
Acha.
Yeah.
Really? Well, if that would be the case, this is a nice argument. Then how did we come here? We had a spirit, isn't it? Does he accept that we are spiritual beings?
Yes.
He says that we like start from minerals and then we evolve gradually, plants and like this up to perfection.
In other words, we don't start from the spiritual world.
And that's not. And then we are like inactive for a state, and then when we get bored from inactivity, then we start with a new circle. So that is like a perpetual. We also between being active in spiritual bodies developing for different lives, and then we are like an inactive spiritual perfectional state. But when we want to attain higher perfections, then we have to take more births again. I think that's as far as I understood something like that.
Amazing. So originally the living entity is spiritual, right? And where does he come from? He started in minerals, everyone. See, it is, I can't really, I would have to know exactly, but just one point which usually we can say is that if we are originally spiritual living entities, we have a state of purity. We are part of God. So the fall down and covering of consciousness seems to be a fact, because otherwise why would we be here? It is possible. And therefore, considering it from this perspective, it is also possible that someone who is more evolved here, say a human being, can fall down into an animal form of life. This is I found this argument very convincing, and I used it in several cases, and people said, yes, now I understand your conception. It's a very wishful and hopeful philosophy that you can only evolve. But even in this human form of life, this is not always a fact. We see that people who once were on a high level, very sophisticated people, begin to behave like animals. There is one professor in Heidelberg who was a professor of philosophy, and later he became a beggar. He's now on the streets. And everyone who knows him says, it's amazing, his consciousness has turned so much. It is a fact in psychology that people's consciousness can turn to such a low level. It's amazing. There are many, many... how this is done is described in one story of a Brahmana. See, there was once this father who had a retarded son, and when he was 3 years old and he couldn't still speak, of 5 years, I forgot, he took that son and threw him in the well. Chum. And then he sealed the well with a stone. Yes, this is because he was so frustrated. So, but in the well there was water, and on the side there were something like cucumbers growing, some squash. So the boy didn't die. He just drank and ate the cucumber-like fruits. Amazing, isn't it? So he became quite healthy, happy. No, healthy, but he became healthy, but not happy. Until one day he had a flash. He saw his previous lives. And when he saw them, he felt also happy. He understood, yes, due to my karma, I had to be born in this situation. I had to be pushed into the well. So a couple of, sometime later, the mother came, who was still very attached, and she screamed, son, where are you? And out of the well came the voice, here, mommy, here. So she felt, haunted by a ghost? So she put away the stone, and there she saw her nice little boy. She helped him out of the well and said, what happened? Well, father pushed me in the well. Oh, this rascal. He told me you had gone into the forest and some tiger ate you up. Ah, what a rascal. No, mommy, he is quite all right. It is my karma for which I was pushed into this well. I saw what I did in my last life. Oh, said the mama, tell me, this sounds interesting. Yes, I was a Brahmana in my previous lives back, and I became extremely lusty, like it was described in the lecture. I became so lusty. All I was thinking of is sense gratification. So as a result of this, I was born as a tiger. So one day I was a little careless. I walked on the side of the jungle, and then the king's man caught me and put me in the zoo. There I grew up. One day the king's daughter came, and everyone was out, so I felt some romantic emotion in my heart. So I made some sounds, how much I liked her, and she was interested and opened the cage. When I just was about to pounce on her, the king's men came and they misunderstood the whole thing. They thought I was going to kill her, but I just wanted to have some relationship with her. So they clubbed me to death. My next birth, I was born as an Osna. An ass. I was born as an ass. And again the same thing happened. I served the washerman. One day I brought the daughter of the house to the river, and there she took her bath, only dressed by the air, and I became completely enthusiastic for sexual intercourse. I jumped into the river to enjoy with her, but I had forgotten that I couldn't swim, so I just drowned. This is not what I did, Chiranjeev Prabhu, all these activities, which I'm saying. It's from one Vedic book. So then, at my next birth, I took birth as a, what is it, papagai? What is it?
Parrot,
yes, as a parrot. And again, when the daughter took me on her arm, I became so much fascinated by physical urges. I flew at her to attack her with loving emotions. But she misunderstood and chased me around in the house, the whole family, and finally I was killed when they slapped the door. Between the door, my head got stuck. So, finally, because I was so lusty all the time, I had to be born as a retarded human being, and I was thrown into a well. And as a result, this was the result, this was my natural karma. And we're just talking about the subject. As a result, I was punished so heavily, and this, therefore, I'm not angry at my father. This was my karma. I was just so lusty. I deserved it. So in this story, and there are others, we can see how the soul, due to material desires, degrades himself. And there are many Nishinga Dev Prabhu. You should tell this philosopher that the consciousness gets degraded. That's a fact. You could tell him the story. This is a fact, and you can see it in this life. People become so low. They identify with their dogs. There is once Kavi Chandra Maharaj told me there was an exhibition. Who looks like his dog? And they had, you know, they had pictures of the dog and then the human being, you know, same hairstyle, very attractive, same look in the face. This is going on. The people are really degrading in their consciousness. It's so according, this is something he must also understand. According to your consciousness, you take your next body. So if you degrade your consciousness to the level of an animal, that's where you go. They're so hopeful. They make philosophies just to justify their material enjoyment. That's all. They're not very serious people. Quite naive. Anything else?
We were asking both Harikesh Swami and Sunosa Swami about the original position of the living entity, and I thought that their answers were kind of contradictory, because what Harikesh Swami said was that our eternal relationship to Krishna has never really been manifest, so he was arguing that you cannot fall down from an akunta. And what Sunosa Swami said was that you do not fall directly, but this relationship has been manifest. But then you go gradually down. You enter into Mahavishnu, and so. What is he? What do you?
It's this point is discussed on the GBC level by our greatest philosophers, because devotees keep asking about this. Now it is very difficult to give one answer to this. This is what I have learned so far from this discussion, because it pertains to a state which is inconceivable to our mind and logic. The original condition of the living entity is in the spiritual world. And what do we understand of the spiritual world? It is very difficult. I could tell you many things which our mind really cannot understand. It's not possible to put these two concepts together without a contradiction. So it is amazing that in Prabhupada's books there are statements which seem to contradict themselves. There is one purport in the fourth canto where it said the living entity comes to actually hate the loving devotional service to Krishna. And that seems to indicate that he was engaged in Krishna's service. And he falls down into the material world as a result of this. So, but then there are other statements where it is said that no one of us falls from a direct loving relationship with the Lord. There are such relationships. So both of the answers you have heard are certainly correct. Now, because this is such a difficult subject, I will attempt to give one answer how I can put together all these contradictions in this answer. Not all this contradiction, all these statements, all these informations. The fact that Prabhupada says back to Godhead, it means we were once there. But how can a Nitya Siddha, an eternally perfected living entity, fall? This is the difficult thing which has to be solved in the answer. So, please listen to this answer very carefully and try to understand it. And if you can't, just be satisfied, because then you can't understand. The way it is, we are all eternal paths and passes of Krishna. We have been enjoying a loving relationship with him, but because we I have the whole thing worked out. I just noticed. Because this is how we start. We are part and parcel of Krishna's, and we have the same qualities as him. One is we are enjoyers. Now, in order to enjoy, there must be a ras, a taste. You can't enjoy something if there is no taste, right? When you have no taste for a certain preparation, in prasadam, you cannot enjoy that. There must be a taste, an appreciation. Otherwise, there is no question of enjoyment. Now, like you know, I will speak in your language. You're a prasadam lover. One can see by the size of your belly. sometimes you desire to taste this, right? And sometimes that. Sometimes halava appears very utsakt, very tasty. That is mostly in the winter season. And sometimes ice cream appears to be very tasty, and halava is too much. So this is what it means when we are an enjoyer. There are varieties of taste. In the spiritual world, because we do have an independent, we are independent independent condition. So we can sometimes develop the taste to enjoy without Krishna being put in the center. We still enjoy, but we do not put Krishna so much in the center. We take this taste. No, thank you. No halava today. We become we become a little bit more oriented towards our own enjoyment. We become, what they say, Sohoda Swami once said it very nice, we become blissed out, so to say. We want to be the enjoyers. Just like on Sankirtan, it sometimes happens when we are performing devotional service, we enjoy for ourselves. Oh, I'm so good, I'm talking like Mephistopheles. Everything is very nice here. And everything works so nice, I can fix the computers like a madman. Everything runs. You know, we become blissed out, we forget Krishna a little bit. This has happened, meaning we get to a lower state of enjoyment, where we don't enjoy fully with Krishna. Our own, we become a little bit more neutral, so to say. And therefore we desire to serve Krishna, not in a way which is completely spiritual, only for his pleasure. We want our pleasure, and we want to serve him, for instance, as Brahma. It is described that the first condition which the soul takes when he leaves the spiritual world is Brahma, the living form of Brahma. So therefore we fall and go to Brahma. Or like so the Swami explains it, we enter into Mahavishnu, and there we see the reflection of Rama, goddess Rama. You know this explanation? It's from Brahma Samhita. We see the material energy in an attractive form as a lady, and we want to enjoy like Krishna. He also has an associate, female as we also want to enjoy. Therefore we come here, out of the body of Mahavishnu. So he describes this progression. So in this explanation, you have two statements resolved. One is, we have a relationship, and we had a relationship to Krishna. This is very important, because it says back to Godhead, and Prabhupada said, we come to not like the devotional service to Krishna, but we leave our relationship, because we are independent, and we develop a slightly different taste, a rasa, where Krishna is not fully in the center, and we still want to serve him. Not that we become envious. This is not in the spiritual world. This green, stinky enviousness which we experience in this material world. And then we slowly go down. It's not that you fall from the spiritual world into Copenhagen, and become a beer drinker and a loud music fan. It's not like that. It goes by progressions. Our Vaikunthanat will have a intelligent point, I can see. No, I'm not joking, please.
To me it appears that there is, for this desire there is no place, since the spiritual world is absolute and that is a relative.
Yes. Therefore we have to come to the relative world. But how can this desire, which is relative, appear in the spiritual world? Now I understood. Yes. Well, see, just take it that, approach it from the point of ras. There is a different taste, to enjoy in a different way. It's not that we completely, in the beginning, when we are in the beginning in the spiritual world, we have all this relative idea. We just want to enjoy in a different way. Why all this halava? It's like this. And this is not purely a relative way. There are devotees who, there are so many tastes in the spiritual world which are there. Some, they steal Krishna's lunch package. I mean, it's a legend. It appears all the time. But here, in what I was telling is, some wrestle with Krishna and put him on the floor. It's not that they just throw flowers all day and all night. You know, there are different rasas there. But in the progression which I said, they become a little bit more neutral towards Krishna and become a little bit, like Prabhupada said, we want to be Krishna. This is how it comes. We want to, but it starts very subtle. But you will not understand, Vaikunthanath Prabhu, this is how I put it all together from books, from what I have heard. Of course you could say there are still loopholes in this, because the way I am presenting it here is for the Western, for our minds. But the thing, the way it happens is inconceivable to our minds. So this is just an attempt to show how we want to be God, like Prabhupada says. We become blissed out. I think this is so nice. Then you become blissed out in devotional service. Do you say this? I have seen today on the blackboard, Spasset Ut. Yeah, so there must be Blissed Ut, you know. It is when we become... put ourselves in the setta. Enjoyment. It happens to everyone in Krishna consciousness at one time. We become intoxicated by pleasure, which we experience in devotional service. So that's what happens there. And Krishna doesn't like it, therefore he leaves. You remember Srimati Radharani? She thought, oh, so wonderful. I'm with Krishna, and no one else. And then Krishna just left her, sitting in the darkness. She became desperate. I mean, that's of course a different thing, but this is again in the realm of Leela. This, what I'm telling, is not a Leela. We fell down, actually. But please, think about this. And think that you can't. Therefore, Prabhupada, it's very important how he addresses this point. This must be said. And the Acharya before also. I know of one statement of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how he addresses this point. Prabhupada says, if you fall from a ship into the ocean, don't think how it happened. It's irrelevant. You must get out. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave the same answer, ultimately. He said, when you have a bullet in your flesh, you should not think which direction, which angle it hit. You know, you just get the bullet out because it might kill you. So ultimately the Acharyas, they know that we can't understand it, and therefore Prabhupada has not written a book how the soul fell from the spiritual sky. Right? There are different statements. I'm very, 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 very curious to hear what the GVC finally releases as a paper, if they do it at all. I know in Mayapur there was this discussion going on, and I remember I was sitting in this room, Tamakrishna Maharaj, and then Harikesh Maharaj came in. That they discussed so many points. Was Sridharananda Maharaj, of course, has a complete different idea, and so on. Let us see what. Maybe they will not publish anything. Then we have to break into the secrets and find out the discussions and so on. This is all how I can answer it. For me, for my mind, it resolves all the things. But I can imagine that still there are more questions to this. We had a seminar in Vrindavan about this. Finally, the seminar, it was given by Sahota Maharaj. And there was so much discussion in the seminar. And finally he said, well, okay, we will just talk from the moment where the soul entered the material world how it fell down then, because that can be retraced. We asked Yadurani about it. She also said, I can't resolve this. I mean, there was a question to Yadurani in the Heidelberg temple. She couldn't, she didn't answer. I think this is so nice in Krishna consciousness. There are certain things, explanations are given. I think, please think about this explanation. You would think there's many points, subtle points are in there. But ultimately we also must say there are certain realms which are achintya, inconceivable. I think this is so nice, which cannot be conquered by our mind. I feel satisfied with this. Okay, any other question? Actually, it's 9:10. There's one question. When do we drink milk? I think we should end here, otherwise I'm not invited again if I always put so long question. No, keep this for tomorrow, please. If otherwise, CNG will not invite me again. this is already 9:10. This is unusual if we do so long. Tomorrow, yes? Tomorrow is Sunday. Hare Krishna. Yeah. 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 Yeah.